Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with Music and the Truth Until Dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. It's 12 o'clock, Americans, another day closer to victory. And for all of you out there on or behind the lines, this is your song.
You are now listening to the Patriot Power Hour, flagship show of the Patriot Broadcasting Network, a radio station focused on growing indomitable all-American 21st century liberty. This live episode of the Patriot Power Hour is brought to you by Ready-Made Resources. Plan, prepare, preserve with ReadyMadeResources.com. Now, let's welcome our hosts. Ben, the Breaker of Banksters, Cochran, and Future Dan, the editor-in-chief of the most original news radar on the planet, FutureDanger.com.
We are back. We are live. Patriot Power Hour. So sorry for being gone. But it's August 21st, 2019, and we're live. Ben the Breaker Bankster's here. I went to vacation. I went to Cancun. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit. It was nice. It was sweltering, but the rates were cheap, and the tequila was good. And I'm also joined, of course, with my host, Future Dan of FutureDanger.com. How you doing, sir?
Good. You missed Epstein dying when you were gone.
I know. Literally, I took like 36 hours off of news, and it was that Sunday. And my brother-in-law said, Epstein died. I'm like, no way. He's lying. Yeah. It happened.
So there's a gap in the archives. Patriot Power Hour did not cover that week. Just so that no one's confused later when they check out the archives, we weren't on air that week. But he suicided or was committed suicide in Manhattan Correctional Facility, probably taking with him all kinds of exposure of powerful pedophiles.
Unbelievable. So – we're not going to get into this the entire show, but without what we started real quick.
No, that's just to mention in passing. So we did
in passing.
We're going to move on to today, but that happened.
My question is, maybe he's still alive. It's all conspiracy. I don't know. I think
they're going to have to find bodies.
This is one of those situations where he let them, or he knew he was going to die, and it happened. It's not like he, it's like, all right, I got to take one for the team here. Probably.
They're going to have to dig up bodies on his orgy island, or nothing ever gets believed.
Even that. It's like people have so much cognitive dissonance, they still don't believe it. But we got a lot of other stuff to talk about on episode 66. Got a lot of financial news that occurred in the past week, and we're headed into kind of Labor Day weekend. It's a week and a half from now. And as they say, the fall is when the businessmen get back in town. But maybe we'll see a big pop. The last several falls, fall time, we've had nice kind of bumps on the stock market. So maybe that whole collapse in the fall is not really going to materialize.
Well, we got the yield curve inverting for the second time in recent weeks today, and some CBO budget deficit projections are insane, and almost all of global debt, sovereign debt is unprecedented percentage of it is now yielding negatively. So that's not signs that things are healthy and safe.
No, absolutely. And it's not just like fringe debt out there that is negative now.
Sovereign debt.
It's not just fringe countries, I suppose. Ironically, today of all August 21st, 2019.
Germany tenure.
The 30-year went negative.
Yeah.
The 30-year, not a 10-year, 30-year. 30-year went negative. That's 30 years into the future where you're guaranteed a loss on that bond. That's how bad it is. Now, 10 years, like, I don't know. We can look at the exact stats, but it's much lower than zero. But a key on this was that auction technically failed. It didn't even get fully subscribed by any means, meaning, you know, there's a lot of that that went.
It's a massive tax on wealth. Just if you place your money in those things, you have to pay the sovereign to own their debt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, people do it when they're scared, but you got to remember you're paying the sovereign, but a lot, especially in Europe and Japan, but increasingly throughout the entire world, it's actually the central banks that are buying those bonds anyway. So it's kind of incestuous. So like, to make sense.
None of that works anymore.
Well, I mean,
functions according to any normal rules of
physics.
normal conceptions of economics.
Right. Well, they got this modern monetary theory and the equivalent by any other name that doesn't. They think it's almost like a new level of that. Well, the old stuff didn't explain this, but that's because we're in this new look at Jerome Powell right there. He's the new genius. It's going to take us into where he'll convince you negative rates are actually legitimate. I'm putting my stake in the ground. Powell will be going for negative interest rates before his term is
out. During his term.
Yep. Unless Trump gets rid of them in the next 6 months or something. But I'm foreseeing the U.S. having negative treasury yields by, I'd say, let's just go ahead 1 year from now, August 2020.
All right.
I'm looking at zero or less on the 10-year. Not to say 30. I'll say 10-year. It's very possible. And that's what Trump wants. He wants them to cut up 100 basis points. I've seen that in many headlines. So that takes us pretty damn close. It just takes two of those, and we're going to be at zero. And he's going to be like, look, Europe does negative. Why can't we go to zero? And it's just, I see that as a possibility. I'm not guaranteeing it, but that's a good chance.
Into an election.
And I'm calling. I don't do many calls on here. This is like only
into an election here.
Yeah, because that'll spur the market like a, you know what? Dow's like, what, 26,000 right now? It'll go to 30 plus. And people will be like, wow, this is kind of crazy, but this is new generation. You know,
he's going to get hoovered.
Well, that's
going to get hoovered.
This may go.
It should be 1929 again. It'll be called 2020. Holy crap, he's going to get hoovered if he does that. That whole thing will swirl into nothing. Eventually, like the Soviets marched through, 70 years in Russia with that entire empire, and it was the Marxist Communist Manifesto. We lived that way. We were Soviets now, right? 1989, it all fell apart because it wasn't working. It swirled.
Right.
So this whole groupthink that represents the financial elites, the globalists, the D.C. consensus on Bretton Woods is marching this thing off the cliff, and they're all going to just say that they don't agree that a cliff exists, like the Soviets in Afghanistan in 86, but then it all came apart.
I just came up with a theory. I think, and I kind of, this has gone through my brain before, so to speak, what he would, if Trump is really playing 4D chess and really does understand this, which maybe he does, he's a good businessman.
Maybe.
Look, he's saying Europe, Bank of Japan, China, everybody's running off that cliff full speed. What we need to do is run faster so we get more flight. So when we fall off the cliff, we'll get further.
That won't work.
But it's like, he's like, hey, we're all going to head into a war and a collapse anyway. We may as well get our best head start. If he's, I could justify it in a national security way because of that. Like, hey, we're almost out of turbo. We got to hit the nitrous now and just go for it because everyone's falling off the cliff. And I really think if any of those I just named fall off the cliff, everyone will too. Like when there's truly a currency crisis in one of those. So that could be his logic. I don't know. That's kind of what he's saying, though. He said we need to be on an even playing field.
How many countries could be in revolt simultaneously on the planet? How many before
almost
you became uncomfortable with it?
I mean, what's the definition of the revolt? Because I could see many countries. No, I'm not saying all by any means, but a large percentage seem to be heading or in some sort of revolt right now. I mean, look, Hong Kong, even parts of America, they're not in revolt. We have rumblings of it. There's a lot of other countries that are just, look at Nicaragua, Venezuela, a lot of Latin countries. But
Mexico,
also,
Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan. Those countries are
Kashmir.
You know, lost states, right? They're failed states. But how many European countries could see, you know, yellow vest protests, but going much wider and more violent?
Right. That's what
a financial crisis could do.
Definitely. What I'm worried about is, especially, is the average person right now is not really, has never been poor in the Western world, especially, but kind of in the wealthy classes. Insofar as if people really do lose everything in terms of monetary, they lose their house and they can't get food and stuff, they really will freak out, like kill themselves or like go on murder sprees or just be so depressed they'll never be able to lift themselves out of their bootstraps or whatever, lift themselves up by their bootstraps. Like the average American isn't as tough as they used to be. I know. Sounds like kind of.
So
like
they'll get tougher if there's a second Great Depression.
Well, maybe we need that to cool the herd a little. Not that I'm saying in the eugenics fashion or anything, but you're right. But I mean, I'm worried.
But
like,
the discrediting of the of the semi-capitalist. I shouldn't even use the word capitalist obtaining right now. But free trade's dead. Trump has taken that away. But whatever amount of free market principle that's going on that Trump's trying to reinvigorate at the federal level, if he is hoovered, if it crashes on him and it gets blamed on him.
Yeah.
Rest of our lives, we will be in whatever the next new deal is, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot less economic freedom there.
No, good point. So, I mean, that's the thing. If Trump's looking a little too short-term or he plays his cards wrong, he may even win the election, but it's going to totally tarnish his legacy in anything he tried to do.
He could send free market, small government ideals
way back behind Adam Smith's time.
Pretty far back. Yeah. If he gets
900 AD.
hope he knows what he's doing, because we cannot have him get.
Right. And so I certainly do not support the race to the bottom interest rates, unless you might be able to convince me if you're some sort of national security wonk genius that we're all going to World War III anyway. We need to do this to get that last beef. I'm like, if I was playing a video game, I would do that. But everything in my gut says don't fall into that trap. Don't widen and increase the strength of the black hole of debt like this is doing by far. So I guess we'll find out. We're coming up on commercial, actually. We got the news blitz coming up. Looking forward to that. FutureDanger.com. Be sure to follow along if you're listening live. FutureDanger.com. We're going to be hitting that news blitz. And we're here every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. So plug for ourselves. Be sure. Bookmark the site. You can check out all of our archives, of course, but of course, live show's best. And we'll be right back. Patriot Power Hour. Pursuing news for the prepared. That's the mission of FutureDanger.com, an American news link heat map that allows users to achieve situational awareness across numerous indicators and topics, all with just one handy dashboard. This is Ben, the breaker of Bankster's Cochran, and hey, if you've listened to Patriot Power Hour, you know how useful FutureDanger.com has been for our show. Not only does Future Danger list, categorize, and rate dozens of articles each week, Future Danger also allows us to dive deep into the historical archives, empowering analysts and news hounds alike, heck, even some talk radio hosts, to discover trends, better prepare their families, and really just get ready for hardships to come. The Future Danger Dashboard and Patriot Power Hour, teaming up to bring the latest liberty, security, economic, and natural news to the people.
Stay right here for more of the Patriot Power Hour, the flagship show of the Patriot Broadcasting Network.
What if you're not back by the time the engines have cooled?
Why you keep moving?
What do you suppose he's gonna do?
Retaliate first.
Patriot Power Hour, August 21st, 2019, Episode 66, Heat Map, News Blitz. Column 1, we got POTUS favoring firearm background checks but giving no details. That one's fallen under National Firearms Registry, enacted or decreed. This is on the heels of mass shootings across the United States this summer. Coroner says Epstein hanged himself in suicide. Epstein prison guards are not cooperating with DOJ probe. Facebook banning women for Trump ads, but I don't even know if that should rate any longer. The number of malfeasances by the social media is in terms of censorship. That's it for column one. Column two, today, the president criticized Denmark and European allies for not contributing enough to NATO. That falls under the indicator NATO dissolves. Of course, green level. Very distant news, but it is the U.S. president talking down the alliance. In Korea, we got activity by the North Korean regime that resembles when Trump was coming into office, firing missiles into the sea, six weapon tests in just a month. State media or state ministries are saying the South will pay a painful price, quote, painful price for joint U.S.-South Korean command post exercises. And today, Japan warned that they have intelligence. North Korea has now miniaturized its nukes, so they can put them on. They're saying what that leads to is they can go on top of missiles. All right. War with Russia, very distant, but Russian president says Tomahawk cruise missiles that the United States just tested, ground-based Tomahawk cruise missiles, raise new threats to Russia. They sure do. We used to have a treaty against that. Now we don't. Neither side, both sides abrogated INF. This past Saturday, we had 13 arrests up in Portland. It was Proud Boys, Antifa, street violence, probably the only place in the United States that has that regularly, yet it can become contagious. Looking at a summer that's been free of riots, luckily. That's the closest we're getting right now. Chinese military aircraft conducting drills simulating targeting of Japanese warships in the East China Sea. That happened in May, came out this week. That's a picture on the Western Pacific strategic environment, simultaneous to Hong Kong, where the protests don't stop. Photos suggesting China's boosting its military in the province and nearby. They're bolstering. We made that call several weeks ago on Future Danger Watch for the military buildup. They built up, but they haven't used it yet. And nevertheless, the protests continue. Column four, fluoridated water during pregnancy linked to lower IQs. That actually triggers fluoride effects exposed. We got black with red. It's a scientific study. It's showing it. If you grew up in a suburbia where you had fluoridated water, and this seems to be applicable to you or people you know. My heart goes out to you. It's so hard and painful to talk about, but may it damage kids. May it damage kids. May it damage the whole generation. Pestilence. Year-long Ebola outbreak spreads to third province in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. In Asia, 40 dead in Bangladesh due to dengue outbreak. They had 50,000 cases throughout that country of Bangladesh since January. Over half a billion bees dropped dead in Brazil within 3 months. That's up on column four. Natural and scientific man's relationship to both and the dangers therein. Chinese researchers racing to grow replacement organs for humans and animals. That's upon us. We've talked about it before. Somewhat sickening. And then the economic column, which really ought to just be called the debt column because all news is based upon it. We have average sovereign yield outside the U.S. turns negative for the first time. Average sovereign. So most, I used that word and I wasn't sure of it, but it was most foreign debt.
It's now 1%.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And again, the bond market yield curve inverts again. We're not going to get into what that actually means. If you don't know, maybe it's not necessarily critical that you do know, but know when you hear the bond market yield inverts, yield curve inversion, it's not good. It's not normal. Gets people's attention. That's CNBC reporting it, obviously, as bad news. Federal Reserve minutes, FOMC minutes, hint at coming quantitative easing. We can get into that next. Federal government deficit exceeds $12 trillion through 2020, 29, 12 trillion in the next 10 years. I bet you that's not even half of what it ends up being, unless something radical changes. The president last week, right at the end of last week, held a call with bank CEOs as markets were plunging. We had one negative 800 day, and he's not afraid to just pick up the phone and talk to any executives, and they pretty much take his calls, right? Also in economic news, in our last piece of news on episode 66, JP Morgan trader pleaded guilty to gold manipulation. That goes under the indicator precious metal price suppression exposed. I guess we could name it price manipulation, but I got a strong feeling they were suppressing the price, not
increasing
it. So that's pretty much – it's just one trader, so we don't have a black and red full – stuff hitting the fan level on future danger, but it's pretty much hardcore evidence that that stuff happens. And when you add it all up and all the column three indicators, many of them are blue right now. There's no news. They're deactivated. But you can see how recent they've been activated because they list that way top to bottom.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of them have a potential to percolate spot on. The crisis you're talking about potentially seeing would see – several black and reds in this column, and who's to say it couldn't happen in a heartbeat? But since we started Future Danger in October 2015, we haven't had that.
Right. That was great news, Blitz. Real quick to touch on the economic. Right now, the U.S. 10-year is only 1.586%. So round up 1.59%. You know, normally, historically, 4 or 5%. It's kind of, you know, what it's been. It's been higher. It's been lower. But 1.58%, that's not super high already. I said, that's the one where I said zero is kind of what I was looking at.
UK 10-year, 0.47 negative.
Yeah. The
shit.
Japanese, negative 0.247.
Yeah.
The French 10-year, minus 0.4.
0.4. French 0.4, yeah.
Or that's negative 0.4 for French. Actually, sorry, the UK is actually positive.
And German 0.67.
Yeah, negative
0.67. Negative 0.67.
So the point is, as you mentioned on the heat map on Future Danger, more than 50% of all foreign debt or all sovereign debt outside of the United States is negative. First time ever by any means. Like it never
average.
The average
foreign.
Okay. So, and the funny thing is just, I don't have the exact stats on me when things started flipping negative, but in the entire history of bonds, which is several hundred years, but even just in the past, let's just say 50, 100 years, modern time, there was never negative. Right?
They broke it.
Yeah. They broke it. It's not coming
back. This is broken.
They tried to come back, and that's when they raised rates 8 times, but it was only 0.25% each time, and now they're already going back. And as I said, Trump wants 100 basis point cut. What would that do to that 10-year? Just that by itself would knock it from a 1.59% to a 0.59%. There's not always a perfect correlation one for one. But what I'm saying is Trump already wants to take that 1.59 to 0.59 in a roundabout way. That's not much further to go from 0.59 to 0. So it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. You will be seeing reds and possibly some of those SHTF red text on black background on Future Danger and Economic. But it doesn't even necessarily have to be a panic time like Lehman yet for that to take place. Now, to have more quantitative easing, that could go hand in hand.
But
too.
It's almost like stat prog government worship, mind frame, groupthink says if we don't mind, I mean, if I'm a average establishment voter in any of these countries, socialist, statist, in this country, predominantly Democrat voter, but not exclusively because there's a sizable portion of Republican voters who can't think of this any differently either, who don't mind, then why would it matter if it was negative debt?
It's negative interest. You can feel, you know, what they're going to say is, hey, you know, The age of positive interest rates on this sovereign debt is over, but if everyone just keeps going along to get along, it won't be the end of the world. Now, what you've mentioned both on air and off air when we were discussing is just the malinvestment. So markedly increase that malinvestment and the corruption. But it'll will kick the can down the road for a little while. I don't know how long. It might only be like 6 months rather than 6 years like last time, or 10 plus years. I think that they have some runway, though. They have these rates. They can bring it to zero, potentially lower temporarily. Of course, they'll say it's emergency measures, but they also said all these other things are supposed to be emergency measures.
I got a question before you take us out on the break. You can think about it over the break, come back with
it. All right.
What if they just made an international agreement between whatever number of countries with currencies in the agreement, the treaty, that whoever has the lowest, just call that zero. Nothing can be less than zero. Now, most might crater at zero for a long, long time, but why even measure it negative?
All right. I'll try to answer that. We'll be right back. Patriot Power Hour.
Fire and wind come from the sky, from the gods of the sky. But Crum is your god. Crum, and he lives in the earth. Once giants lived in the earth, Conan. And in the darkness of chaos, they fooled Crum. And they took from him the enigma of steel. Crum was angered, and the earth shook. And fire and wind struck down these giants, and they threw their bodies into the waters. But in their rage, the gods forgot the secret of steel and left it on the battlefield. And we who found it are just men. Not gods, not giants. Just men. And the secret of steel has always carried with it a mystery. You must learn it, little Conan. You must learn its discipline. For no one in this world can you trust. Not men, not women, not beasts. This you can trust.
Listening to the Patriot Broadcasting Network, sponsored by ReadyMadeResources.com.
We're back. Patriot Power Hour. Invigorating discussion tonight on the economy, bond markets. I'm telling you, this stuff is not boring, even though it sounds on the face of it. I think we're having a pretty engaging conversation here, and this stuff is important. We talk about a lot of other topics and issues here on Patriot Power Hour, but let's continue rolling on this, because I think it's meant to be tonight.
So the question to you is, what if there was a Bretton Woods 2 treaty among Western and developed countries, G7's meeting, right? Or more than that, where they make it by agreement, no sovereign debt can ever yield negatively. You could sit on the floor of zero. You can attempt to bring your rate above zero, but it can't ever be below zero.
Right.
What would that mean? Would that be a just system, or would that produce side effects that are heretofore unimaginable?
So essentially everyone would go to zero. So
the U.S. wouldn't. We're at 1.5 today on the 10-year.
Right. But I think if you set you set the lowest yielding, the negative, to zero, and the U.S. would be above that, but would they be mandated
right
to
now,
stay at that
everybody
level?
Else would be at the floor.
Right. Is the U.S. mandated to stay at that level, or are they allowed to drop to zero?
You just can't go below it.
Then they would eventually hit zero and be stuck to that bound as well. That might be, like, I'm not saying a solution, but I'd rather see that than test it.
Would that neutralize and end sovereign debt? It'd be meaningless because
it would slowly
never
deteriorate.
Yield.
That would make it deteriorate, but I think it would like hold the line for a while. But like, it's hard to explain. Like, I never really thought of this, to be honest.
There's got to be side effects we haven't thought of. I just came up with this idea. I haven't thought it
they'd
through.
They'd figure out some other way to still get the same effect of that negative interest rate. There's a lot of reasons why the interest rates are negative. I guess one thing to always remember, even I have to, I have a master's in finance, but fixed income's tricky. One thing I've always grabbed onto was interest rates go down, that would mean bonds prices is going up. So if we were going to say interest rates cannot go down anymore, that means bond prices cannot go up anymore, right? Has to be. We're making sure interest rates don't go any lower. That means we're setting a cap on how high bond prices can go. So what you got to remember is interest rates are pretty much all-time low. Bond prices are pretty much all-time high because there's so much demand for it. A lot of the reasons because people just want a safe harbor to put things. They think bonds is the safest thing you can put your 401k into, or even in a lot of respects, massive pensions, whether it's schools,
public unions,
just
school teachers,
everything. So the individual 401k,
all the
way
school
up to
teachers are leaving.
Chicago Teachers Union, everything in between. A lot of them are mandated to hold a certain percentage of treasuries, too, by the way. So you have to have. And it goes from all the way saying you just have to have a risk-free asset, and there's only a couple of them, and it's pretty much treasury. Or they literally say, yeah, you must have, you know, X percent, Y percent of this. They have way more than they're mandated, but I'm telling you, that is mandated. So
decades of establishment politicians brought this upon us. They interlinking the 401k and Roth IRA.
Yeah,
and
no, that definitely helps.
All of the leverage that they put middle class into these structures that have been perverted.
So people would not buy bonds anymore. They know it's not going to go up. It's floored. So that would totally make it that market would not have any real participants. And people would go seek other means of return that are more dangerous. And that could be massive melt up in the stock market that blows up real estate, everything. So that's one thing. Of course, Bitcoin and gold might absorb some of that. But that's really happening anyway, whether it goes to zero or negative one or negative five.
So what you're saying is human economic activity is beyond centralized control.
Well, that's certain.
And that failure to recognize that is just creates another bubble in another direction.
There you go.
It gets us worse off.
That's my answer. There you go. Like, even if we can try to figure out a way to cap it at 0% and the market would instantly figure out a way around.
Just refuse to recognize negative sovereign debt. We just can't let it be. It's just by treaty, we don't accept it.
Hey, compared to the other alternatives, maybe that's not horrible. I'm sure
it's probably a massive.
It sounds better to me than letting it go to -5.
It's probably the worst intervention into the economy that could be thought of for reasons that we'll understand better a week from now. But I want to tell you a DMV story today.
Yes. All right. Enough economics, good stuff. But this is a good story. Go ahead. Have at it.
Yeah, so I had to title a car this week, and I went to my local Department of Motor Vehicles, and I went to the information desk and got my ticket, and I was F-135.
Okay.
And then I got my clipboard. I went and I filled out the title, the process, the sale of the car. I was buying it, so I had to retitle it in my name. And I sat in my chair and had my stopwatch and my phone going on. And 21 and a half minutes to make the line that you stand up from the door to the desk.
Okay.
Then I had to sit. I finally got seen at 1 hour, 46 minutes into that. So it was a good 90 minute or so wait.
Day of the week was this?
Monday.
Okay.
Yeah, Monday, mid-afternoon. And my observations in the Department of Motor Vehicles and my experience both sitting and waiting and then at the desk, I want to tell you about.
Okay.
All right. So there's several indicators. I'm jumping over here now, but I'll come back. There's several indicators in the security arena and the economic arena that apply or you could think about with my conversation with a man born in China and now an American citizen sitting next to me for 90 minutes. And then my experience at the front desk probably would cover several in the column one, strictly speaking. So I want to tell you about my conversation. I did not strike up the conversation with the gentleman next to me from born and raised in China. I was to find out, but clearly he was a Chinese man and spoke with an accent, and he introduced himself to me through conversation.
Okay.
Because his number, he's looking at my clipboard, was F-136. He was their title car, and how the system works at our DMV is you get a letter at the front of your three-digit number, and if you're there for a license, you're the A's. And if you're there for a learner's permit, you're the B's.
Okay.
Apparently, if you're there for the titles, you're the F's.
Okay.
And his first words to me were, how long has this been? So I think he started talking to me about 35 minutes into our wait. So about 50 minutes after I got there and had been sitting for over 30 minutes, he had sat down next to me and he got out there a little bit after me and he started talking to me. And we talked for the remainder of the time until my number was called. And I learned lots of interesting things from this man. He was from Chengdu.
Yep.
In China. And he was old enough to he was 6 years old during the Cultural Revolution. So that would put him in approximately 1960. So baby boomer, but a younger one. And the first thing we talked about is he was quasi complaining about how slow things were moving and how we weren't getting up there. But I took it to a whole new level for him. And it was interesting, the interaction. I went, because I had nothing really better to do than to wait on behalf of my government to service my economic needs at their pleasure. I just went full libertarian and threw some radical ideas into this foreign-born DMV customer to see what would come of it.
Right.
Yeah,
he's complaining about it. Maybe you'll get some good stuff out.
And then eventually we started talking about Hong Kong. But first I'll tell you what I said. He's like, this is that none of them are moving. This isn't going. What? No one's working up there. That's him.
Okay.
And I said, well, that's because everything in front of you is the product of the fact that you can't go somewhere else to achieve that service. It's the monopoly of the government.
Okay.
And it shouldn't be this way, I said to him, because right between the end of the horse era and the beginning of the automobile era, someone in the Northeast states decided licensing of cars is necessary. So we had that conversation about none of this is necessary. We don't need license plates.
I wonder who did.
Now, if I sound like a sovereign citizen and SPLC is going to monitor our archives, then so be it. But it's important to have these exercises. What's the actual advantages and disadvantages of plates on cars, registration on cars, safety instructions, licensing you to drive? Why can't the private market handle all that business?
Okay.
Saying this to a man who was born during the Cultural Revolution in China.
Okay.
He laughed semi-comfortably, but politely, not at me, but about what I had to say on several occasions. And I said, see that desk up there? That is what happens when government steals your freedom and sells it back to you. He paused for a moment when I threw that one at him. And then came back to me and said, well, you got to, you know, in his broken English, but he was easy to talk to and we had a great time. But, and I worked with him to understand as much as I could about how you have to have license plates because too much crime in the transportation would enable it. And I went to him and said, see all those cameras up there? The FBI has all of our faces and databases, all the street signs, all the public locations you go into, it will be a short amount of time before we don't need license plates on cars. They'll know your car just by the image of it. Your plate will be your car. Your face is going to be your license plate.
Yeah.
And if we get to the point where none of this is necessary, then perhaps the 200 people in the room could be at work right now instead of like me, not earning because I'm sitting at the behest of my government. These are debatable ideas, but I was throwing at him full tilt to see his reaction. He was comfortable throughout the rest of the conversation, semi taking me seriously, but I knew I was kind of getting at him. And then I realized he knows things, so I'm going to ask him about international affairs. I'm going to let him slowly understand that I have a degree in this field and understand it. So I asked him about Hong Kong, and I listened to him very carefully. What I realized on short order, talking to him and asking him, what's the stability of the regime over there? How can they avoid a Tiananmen? That he was in full favor of their government.
Okay.
He was anti-Hong Kong protester. He said that Tiananmen would not happen again. They will never use tanks again. They will surgically move in, and his words, drop in and grab only the people that are
really agitated. You know, real leaders or something.
Yes, he refused to entertain the potential of that government losing, becoming unstable.
Right.
Then I asked him about the warehouse explosions a couple of years ago and how major elites were thought to have been attempting to assassinate. When he told me was stuff that at the time we had a future danger, but I never saw what he told me. He told me that the way it came back to people in that followed the after effects of those warehouse explosions.
Yeah.
I asked him, why was the president of China down in the docks?
Why
would they visit? And he says, ostensibly, it's my words, but ostensibly because he was to visit some groundbreaking of something new, some ceremony, some industrial ceremony. But in fact, his regime tricked some opposition into thinking he would be there, and they cleverly arranged chemicals at distances that, Tianjin explosions of 2015, had cleverly arranged chemicals near each other so that it could look like an accident. And he laughed about it. And it was almost like a status progressive subject of a government, not a citizen, as Patriot Power, I would recognize it, accepting the fact that elites battle lethally for power and control.
And that's pretty great. I mean, but if you think about it, when we look at history and stuff, that happens all the time. All they have is shows about the Vikings and Game of Thrones and people try to at least try to kill each other off and take over. But in America, that can never happen. We're civilized. We never.
We've been pretty free of it for this Republic's history. We've been pretty free of it. But we have voters. We got voters in the DMV that find it normal. And I want to talk after the break about what's the potential and what can you as a patriot do to help lessen that. I tried to convert the man by giving him ideas that he'd never thought about before.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, we'll be right back.
Achieve situational awareness. Be prepared. FutureDanger.com.
Atlas! 3 weeks from now, I will be harvesting my crops. Imagine where you will be. And it will be so. Hold the line. Stay with me. If you find yourself alone, riding in green fields with the sun on your face, do not be troubled, for you are in Elysium, and you're already dead! Brothers, what we do in life echoes in eternity.
You are listening live to the Patriot Power Hour, furnished by ready-made resources and fueled by FutureDanger.com.
I am a real American, fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American, fight for what's right, fight.
Hey, we're back, Patriot Power Hour, episode 66.
Yeah.
And we're talking about my conversations with a Chinese man at the DMV, Chinese-American. He's an American citizen now, but he was definitely raised there. Told me that when he was a kid in growing up during the Cultural Revolution, I told him I understood Mao Zedong, his wife at the time, and the Reign of Terror. He came everything close, very close to admitting that he'd seen bodies when he was a child. He said he went to bed hungry, or not went to bed, but every meal he was hungry. That was his words. Every meal he was hungry. I talked to him about starvation, the stability of the regime, assassination attempts on Xi at the warehouses, and what riots. Then I got to the point where I asked him, if there was a mutiny or a major unrest inside of the Chinese government, how would we see it? What would we see? Because I was thinking in terms of future danger indicators.
Right.
We got Chinese mutiny or revolt. We got civil unrest spreading. That's indicated. It's hot right now with Korea, but with Hong Kong. We got war between Taiwan and China, Japan and China, United States and China. We got trade severely declining. Several other economic indicators will be impacted by the stability of China as Trump conducts this trade war with them. So, you know, if I have my stats right, and I don't, but there's at least 6 to 10 other indicators that directly impact. So I really want to know from the guy at the DMV, how could you see, how would you know if something abnormal was going on?
Or did you just kind of probe and without?
No, not at all. Not at all. Okay. It wouldn't have mattered. He wouldn't be in the user. Okay.
True.
But he answered me. He's like, the common people would never know. Straight up.
Common people in America or in China or
anywhere.
Both? Really?
We'd never know.
If there was a attempt on
And he told stories about how certain elite have been fleeing the country and they fled after those warehouse explosions and made it very clear to me that Xi would do things like invite the family to a location under assurances and then disappear them. And he talked openly about that's how it would operate. And basically he said, if elites were fleeing the country, you'd know something went down. But common people, us, would never be able to know that.
Wow. Jeez, that's crazy. I mean, I believe it. Definitely believe it. And then tangentially, the thing I was thinking about was, from 2016 to 2017, a big reason that Bitcoin went from $300 to 15 plus thousand was Chinese demand. And guess what? China then made it illegal to buy or mine. Not that people don't do it, but to buy Bitcoin. Point is, the elite were moving their capital out billions at a time with Bitcoin. 2015, 2016, 2017. So not only are they physically leaving, they're getting their assets out too. And they had to put a stop to that.
So here's the official list of future danger indicators that directly are watched in China. Obviously, war with China starting, that would be probably a naval encounter, air encounter between U.S. forces and China that could spark a war. Obviously, the top one. But Chinese civil unrest spreading, a Japanese-Chinese war. And we covered that in the news earlier. Chinese revolt, which is what essentially would the Hong Kong protests would become next, or coup, which we just talked about how you would never know it was happening. Still keep it as an indicator. Eventually we might know if enough of these indicators all popped off at the same time, no one can hide that information. And also the China suffering starvation, talk to him about that. Didn't really get into Chinese commanders mutinying, didn't get a chance to talk about their army under mutiny, but he was very pro-army, so I'm pretty sure the answer would have been that'll never happen. And didn't get a chance to ask him about foreign assets in China being nationalized. Not sure if economically he was down for that, but security-wise, he definitely understood this thing. And, yeah, those are the indicators that cover China on future danger. They spread two columns, and I was trying to probe this gentleman for insights. Then I went to the desk. Then they call me in the desk. So.
Well, real quick, before, one thing, last thing with this. I remember you told me when you were telling this story, that at least from you, from what he said and your experience, they trust, the Chinese people trust their national government way more than the local government. That's part of the reason. They
part of talking about the civil unrest, I pressed him and I said, like, I see reports that are highly censored about, you know, there are riots and big protests turning into riots, riot police being used in localities around the country. Is he not worried that the unrest could spread from Hong Kong? I mean, he's like, no, the police will handle it, and it'll never get spread into other parts of the country because most of mainland is against Hong Kong in this. And also the fact that, the central government is viewed as a champion of the people vis-a-vis local governments that are often considered woefully corrupt.
Right.
So the it's this perverse situation where basically a totalitarian regime allows local government to be completely corrupt so it can be viewed as
problem solution.
Now, I didn't run that past him, but it's only because I ran out of time.
Okay. All right. We got like 5 minutes. I want you to get to this part about the, our beautiful bureaucratic system here in America.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, one more thing on him.
Okay.
I tried to press him. I said, what if there was bloodshed in Hong Kong? Do you have any family there? And he said, yes, my parents are there.
Oh.
And I said, would they know about it? And it took a while because he kept rejecting, it won't be bloodshed, it won't be bloodshed. And finally I got on the point, well, if there was, like Tiananmen. I know you're saying it can't happen again, but if it did, would your parents know? He basically admitted what do they call it? It's the Great Firewall.
Yeah.
The Great Chinese Firewall.
Turn it on, so to speak.
Couldn't stop it.
It could not.
Could not. Could
just
not.
Because people, well, China, you gotta remember Hong Kong's super compact, massive cities, so maybe even just word of mouth would get through.
But China has so many worldwide connections now that the people doing business, it'd be impossible not to know that there'd been a bloody crackdown in one of their cities by the government. It couldn't stop that information.
Right.
Think how unstable it'll become if that Chinese army, the PLA, decides they gotta run people over with tanks again.
Well, I don't know if it's gonna get that bad. And like you said, but like you said,
I saw it happen in '89.
I think they'd be like he said, a lot more strategic. They would take two or three people at a time at the middle of the night type of thing. But maybe, I mean, if things got so bad they had to, then it would not stay secret.
So they
I could
start,
agree with
they'd
that.
Start doing smog and mirror, fog and mirror ops and disappearing people.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's happening right now.
I know.
To what point does it cause the people that were really only protesting an extradition treaty?
Right.
I mean, if you're upset about an extradition treaty, I think you're going to go berserk if they start disappearing people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, that's very live possibility.
Then I got to the DMV counter.
All right.
And on the title in my state, there was a form that you had to fill out. And the first thing it says, print your name, buyer print your name. So I did. And then you go down and the seller had already printed his name in a spot. And then there's another form field on this bureaucratic DMV form in my state. It says, print buyer's name. And then some more information and date, whatever. So on the second instance of print buyer's name, I wrote as above and took that up. I also wrote some other things on the other side. Most of the fields that were not applicable, I wrote not applicable. And I just left the Social Security number blank because I couldn't see how that had any pertinence on selling a car. And I spent – and simultaneous to that, the gentleman from Chengdu – who says parents were bureaucrats during the Cultural Revolution.
Yeah.
He also got his number called. He left the DMV a lot earlier than me. Because I was left standing there for at least 5 minutes while the lady who of the entire 200-something person crowd waiting in there and the 12 clerks, she and I are American born. I know that. But it had to have been about 12 of us in the entire room and maybe three employees. So that's the neighborhood we're in. She's working in there and we don't, we don't have any problems with each other at first until she reads my form. And then she gets very flustered and says she had to check on this. She went to the back and got told to make me write my name in the field anyways, and that they were really considering not accepting the title, which would have meant I had to get the seller to go get another title. And we bought a car on Craigslist. How easy would it have been to find that guy again? So eventually she came back out with orders that I had to write my name in the second instance. That as above wasn't good enough. So I wrote my name over.
What about your Social Security number?
Well, I'm getting there. So I wrote over the top of as above my name, and because there's no space to do anything else, and she said to do it, and that caused her to have to go in the back again for a while to find out if that was okay. And then
what did they expect you to do? A whole new form?
And then when she came back out, I was told to never do that again.
Oh.
And
wow.
Eventually her supervisor accompanied us while I got my place, I got my registration, paid what I had to pay. And I guess if it's a slave training center, everything that I went through there makes sense. But if it's not, it was pretty bizarre place in the America I want to have. But the outcome of the story, I don't know, I didn't try to make friends with the clerk working for the state. But the gentleman in the chair is to instill alternative thought on how you approach your relationship to your government, even if it's extreme. I will tell you that one last piece of that story that he wasn't coping with. He couldn't even fathom. I didn't mention the American Revolution and all this yet, have I?
No.
Yeah. So at one point, talking about whether there should or shouldn't be, or whether most Chinese mainlanders want are sympathetic to Hong Kong or not, with the unrest spread, he said that almost all are against the protesters.
Mm-hmm.
They would that whatever freedom that they stand up for is hit my words, not his. That they're against that. I said to him, well, at the beginning of this country, when we were colonies, you know what we called those people? And he said, no, what? And I said, Canadians. And he, because they were Tories, and after they lost the war, they had to move to Canada. I didn't get a half comfortable laugh in that moment.
That one?
I got eyes wide open. What is this American talking about? And that's what I try to do. At least he'll remember talking to me. He shook my hand at the end, wished me good luck.
Good.
And again, he complied with whatever they asked him for on the title form and was out and on his way far earlier than me.
Oh my God. He's got a story for life.
True story.
You got a story for life.
True story.
Our listeners have a story for life.
I didn't embellish that.
And like you said, you told me this just before the show. You're like, Patriots don't need to just follow the news and prep and all that stuff. That's important, but
practice what you preach and preach it too.
People. This is a perfect opportunity. So
that's what I tried to do.
Nice. Good stuff. That's the end of the show. Power Hour is over this August 21st, 2019, episode 66. But we will be back next Wednesday, August 28th, Labor Day special. Might as well call it that. Not the end of the season, but the end of my summer. We'll be there. We'll be live. We'll see what happens economically, national security, health, everything. We run the gamut. Look forward to it. Patriot Power Hour. We're going to be signing off.
East Coast. Down here is Mexico. First wave of the attack came in disguised as commercial charter flights, same way they did in Afghanistan in 80. Only they were crack airborne outfits. Now they took these passes in the Rockies.
So that's what hit Calumet?
I guess so. They coordinated with selective nuke strikes, and the missiles were a hell of a lot more accurate than we thought. They took out the silos here in the Dakotas, key points of communication.
Like what?
Oh, like Omaha, Washington, Kansas City.
Gone?
Yeah, that's right. Field traders came up illegal from Mexico, Cubans mostly. They managed to infiltrate SAC bases in the Midwest, several down in Texas, and wreaked a hell of a lot of havoc, I'm here to tell you. They opened up the door down here, and the whole Cuban and Nicaraguan armies come walking right through, roll right up here through the Great Plains.
How far did they get?
Cheyenne. Across to Kansas. We held them at the Rockies and at the Mississippi. Anyway, the Russians reinforced with 60 divisions. Sent three whole army groups across the Bering Strait into Alaska. Cut the pipeline, came across Canada to link up here in the middle. But we stopped their butt cold. Lines of pretty much stabilized now.
What about Europe?
I guess they figured twice in one century was enough. They're sitting this one out. All except England. They won't last very long.
Parsons need to take us in one piece, and that's why they're here now. That's why they won't use nukes anymore, and we won't either, not on our own soil. The whole damn thing's pretty conventional now. Who knows, maybe next week will be swords.
What started it?
I don't know, two toughest kids on the block, I guess. Sooner or later, they're gonna fight.
That simple.
Maybe somebody just forgot what it was like.
Well, who is on our side?
600 million screaming Chinamen.
Well, last I heard, there were a billion screaming Chinamen.
There were.